Friese und Müller Unplugged. The podcast for everything that gets us in motion.
Hello and welcome to a new episode in our podcast, Riese and Müller Unplugged. My name is Julia Jankowski, and on this channel we are talking to people working and talking to Riese and Müller and their way of working. Today I'm glad to talk to Stefan Karsten. Stefan is futurist and urban geographer, and he's a highly sought after expert on mobility. So I'm really, really glad to have him here in our virtual studio and to talk about the topic where we're heading to. So first of all, hello, Stefan. How are you doing today?
Good morning, Jule. Great. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm absolutely happy to have you here. And it's somehow a bit gray here in Wiesbaden. It's end of November, so it's not really, I'm not feeling like going out for a bike ride. What about you?
Well, actually, it's sunny outside. I'm living here in Berlin. Directly in the city center, and the sun is shining, which is astonishing for this time of the year.
Absolutely, that must be a mistake. But usually you have like a concrete wall on the top of the ceiling of the sky, yeah, which will not vanish between November and March in Berlin. I remember that. So lucky you.
Exactly.
So what is that that gets you in motion when we're talking about mobility and the future of mobility?
Well, that's a very easy question to address, but a very difficult one to answer. But let me say it like this. I think it's astonishing how a country such as Germany is focusing on cars for 60, 70 years now. And so many people really are so annoyed, especially in cities, about the dominance of car traffic, about the external effects of cars in our neighborhoods. And it's so interesting and fascinating that so few is changing over these long time periods. And this brought me to mobility, and actually brought me to Daimler, because I was working for more or less 16, 70 years for the premium automotive manufacturer Daimler, Mercedes-Benz, because I had the chance and the opportunity to think about future developments, to think about scenarios, to integrate these kind of aspects into how do we move in future. So, and I'm still with it. I'm still working on these topics and try to change some of the mobility issues that we are facing every day. Mm-hmm.
You're still into it. And in our intro, we promised to disclose some, we call it back-end stories of Riese and Müller, but not only about employees working directly for the company, but also people within the, let us say, the social environment of Riese and Müller. So when we're looking at your career, Stefan, you started off from a point where I may not see really the short connects to being a futurist. Can you tell us something about your career, where you started off?
Yeah, definitely. As you already said, I'm a geographer, an urban geographer, and I had the chance that colleagues from the Daimler Future Lab had a class in the geography department, and I participated in this class. And we got known to scenarios. And actually, the topic that we were dealing with when I was a student was how might mobility evolve in Germany over the next 25 years or so. So it was a student's job, more or less. And it was so interesting to understand these kinds of methods and to get a completely new perspective on our daily issues, on our daily tasks. So that I stick with it, yeah? I stuck with it. Mm. And I stayed with Daimler for 70 years, as I already said. And I left Daimler then 7 or 8 years ago, and now I'm a freelancer, and I'm still working with futures, and I'm still working with geography, with space. And that's interesting.
Can we summarize, like, you used to work for a car company and now you used to work against car companies, or is it too simple, too strict?
No, this would be too simple. And to be honest, I'm still working with car companies, but I'm working especially with cities and regions. I work with mobility players. I work with political institutions. I'm still a lecturer. I'm a speaker. And, you know, when you talk about mobility, it's you have to incorporate, obviously, the car sphere, but you have to incorporate all of the other spheres again as well. So the public transit agencies, the bike manufacturer, the industries that are supplying all these tools. So to give a holistic view on the future of mobility, you have to speak to all of them. And this is important for me.
Not really like from a political point of view, merely from change, like the perspectives you're looking on mobility. So from different angles on this topic.
Exactly.
So I guess one question which is often posed to you as a futurist is, what will the future look like? What will it be like? What is your answer to this kind of question? Am I right? Is it a question which you often hear?
It's a daily question.
It would be my first question for a futurist.
It is a very special question that comes up on every party, you know. So you're a futurist, so how will it be in the future? And my sad answer is that I definitely don't know what the future is all about. Yeah, but I have a pretty good understanding of the framework and of the factors that may influence the future. And so this is my task, to speak to people from all different disciplines and try to gather and to understand what their perspective is. And I try to incorporate these perspectives and make a synthesis out of it. So to see a bigger picture, to see a kind of a mosaic, yeah, that is a composition of all these tiny little stories and images and understandings of what mobility might be. And obviously, I will never be able to see a clear future of this is the future of mobility in Germany. But I have various images and I have various perspectives of what might be the future of mobility in Germany, Europe, and all over the world, obviously.
And that is a completely different idea than thinking of the future as being one distinct or one specific future which already exists, and we have just to find our way to it. So our today behavior, our today reactions will decide what kind of future will we have here. So
Definitely. I think it would be a really false picture if we only depend our acting on one future, on one prognosis, on one extrapolation. Yeah, but this is what the majority of players is doing. They see, they are saying, this is my future. Yeah, and now I act according to it. And what I'm saying, no, there is no single future. There are various futures. And if you incorporate these various futures, you get a better understanding of what to do today. Yeah. You have a better understanding of knowledge. You have a better understanding of uncertainty. And then you can act accordingly. So my task is, especially when I speak with students or even with economic organizations, it's always a task to tell them, please change your perspective on the future. It is really a valuable tool if you understand that the future is not only one, but various. And you can only, you can make a better job when you see it like this.
And beside the fact that the future is not waiting for us, it's more the idea of that we're now, in this very moment, shaping the future by ourselves, which is more like we have like an active part in it, which is obvious and clear, but many people do not act and behave like that with this.
Exactly. I mean, you, especially when we speak about mobility or transportation, you can decide every day on your own. Do I take the car? Do I take public transit? Do I take a bike to come from A to B, to travel from A to B? And many people, I mean, that's pretty clear, think in terms of mobility and traffic on an everyday basis. Okay, my first choice is a car, still in these times. But we have seen during the corona lockdown what happened when people are not moving anymore and when they are not moving with a car anymore. The whole cities, the whole regions are changing tremendously. We have been seeing a blue sky. Clearly blue sky. It was not only visible, but you can even smell it, that the sky is now clear. It's a clean sky. And I mean, we are facing cities like Milan that had so many fatalities with the corona pandemic due to dirty air, dirty emissions. And so I think we have to understand that our daily behavior, as you were saying, is really dependent on our own future and on our own understanding how we would like to gestalt and to create our own future.
Absolutely. Yeah. So talking about vehicles, let's switch to our one of our main topics, the bike, obviously, in a podcast of Riese and Müller. So which role do bikes play in your everyday life? Is it a crucial part of your mobility pool, or is it more like a business issue for you personally speaking?
Yeah, it's a daily tool, to put it like this. I'm living, as I already said, in Berlin, and I'm living in the city center of Berlin. So I have best options of mobility. Mm-hmm. Everything is close by. The school is close by. My office is close by. I have public transit options from Straßenbahn to S-Bahn to metro. I have buses, obviously, nearby. I can walk almost to every activity, and I have a bike, and I either walk or I either cycle to overcome these distances. But I know, on the other hand side, that I'm very privileged to do so. Not many people, obviously, are living here in the city center where all the economic or social activities are so close by. And for me, it's very, very easy to incorporate my thoughts of mobility into my daily routines. And so it's walking, it's cycling, and sometimes a public transit when I go to the dentist, for example, which is far, far away, which is good. So, and I have,
but I have hopefully you don't have to go there very often.
No, but I do have to confess, I have a private car as well, because we have a tiny little house in the rural landscapes, which is an hour from here. In Brandenburg, north of Brandenburg. And when we go there, we go by car. By our own car, because it's very comfortable for my family and my kids. So you see, I have all the options, and I try to take the best out of them.
So you personally have a whole variety of vehicles, of mobility concepts, and the numbers of mobility concepts have risen enormously within the last year. I remember you mentioned that beforehand. So today, how many options do you have in a city like Berlin to choose?
Believe it or not, it's about 30 different options. Mm-hmm. 30 different options. I think this is astonishing, because when you compare it to the beginning of the century, to the year 2000, we had, I think, 5 or 6 different options. Hmm. Yeah, which is just, I mean, now we can speak about mobility, because now we have choice. Now we can choose from various options to overcome the distances within the city. In the year 2000, we had a private car, we had our private bike, we had public transit, we have a taxi. We had a stationary car sharing service in these days as well. And we can walk.
Mm-hmm. I think that was it. That was it.
Mm-hmm. That were the options.
So the number of options have increased enormously. And that leads us to the Future Mobility Report, which was drawn up by you for the Zukunftsinstitut, and which is the connection between you and Riese Müller. Maybe you can, you have just wanted just to talk about the connection between you and Riese Müller within the topic of the Future Mobility Report. And after that, I would love to dive into this really, really interesting and fascinating review you made.
Yeah, it was fascinating, obviously, when I was writing the report. We were more or less in lockdown conditions. Corona pandemic really challenged our daily activities. And, well, the bike schemes, yeah, all over Europe suddenly were rosen, yeah, were growing. And it was fascinating for me to get into this industry. And so I looked for players, and I looked for experts to talk to. And luckily for me, I met or got in contact with Sandra. And we had a great interview on the future of biking and cycling. And that I incorporated this interview to the report, because it was for me so interesting and fascinating that the focus is not only on bikes, but it's more the whole system that is being incorporated by Sandra and by Riese and Müller. And so I was very, very happy to get known to Sandra and to their thoughts and understanding of the future of mobility.
Hmm. And they're thinking far beyond the bike, what you just explained to us. But let's go to the Future Mobility Report, which was released by the Zukunftsinstitut, but you're the author. So can you summarize briefly or describe what were your main findings while researching on the future of mobility?
Yeah, for me, as it was a first report, it was important to provide an overview on very general topics that are important to me. So I had 4 trends: road diet, mobility seeker, all-inclusive mobility, and delivery bots that were, in any kind of aspect, important for these times, for these periods, while we were facing the corona pandemic. For example, road diet is a trend that I'm studying for several years now, but it now shows up in Germany to a very great extent. So road diet means that road infrastructure that is normally devoted for cars is now being, well, transformed and rebuilt to cater the needs of cyclists, of pedestrians, and of the public transit providers. So it's a complete rebalance of the whole system, of the whole infrastructure system that we see not only in the Netherlands, not only in Sweden, not only in Norway, but for the first time also here in Germany, in the car-addicted Germany. And this is interesting, because for me, this is a great indicator and a great factor that we are likely to see a very different future of mobility, even in Germany.
Well, I totally agree. And in my perception, also the car drivers assume that the city belongs to them, or to, at least to their cars. And consequently, they're not really keen on leaving space for other road users. What could be effective ways to convince them that they are about to gain something in terms of quality of life in a city? Have you some good examples for it? Or what could be a good argumentation, a good way to convince people?
Interestingly, car drivers are normally very negative about these futures and the personal consequences. But interestingly, what we see all over the world is after these transformations and after these rebuilding took place, the driving speeds really increased. So driving with a car, even when you have less infrastructure, was even better for them. So I'm currently working on a fascinating project and idea, and I'm on the advisory board of this so-called Radbahn project in Berlin. And the Radbahn is a more or less 9 kilometer cycle stretch from the western parts of Berlin to the eastern parts of Berlin, from the zoo to Oberbaumbrücke. And the idea is to have a cycle path beneath the elevated subway line U1. Mm-hmm. And it is today, it's as you were saying, it is a pure space for cars. Yeah, people just park their cars beneath the elevated subway. And some clever guys and architects and planners had the idea, okay, let's just transform this parking space for cars into a public space for pedestrians and for cyclists. And, you know, there are great images and great, narratives that are now all over the city of Berlin. And people get an idea of what space and what mobility might also incorporate. It's not only parking cars or, well, dead space. It's a livable part of the city. And we have, obviously, we have to rebuild it to have such a great cycle path here in the center of Berlin. But the consequences for the society, for the people living by, for retail, and as I said at the outset, even for car drivers, will be fantastic and will be very beneficial for all of them.
So that is, to me, it's a very appealing example for a change of mobility. And when we talk about the transformation, so do we also have to deal with appealing and with, but also with distracting? Do we have also to punish certain behavior patterns? I mean, it's always the game of, distract certain behavior patterns and maybe encourage people to behave in a different manner. What do you think would be more helpful to contribute to a transformation?
I truly believe that if we change the landscape of the city, if we change the infrastructure of the city, we can do very positive, and we can create very positive futures and very positive outcomes for all participants that take part on the daily mobility. So we don't need to punish car drivers. We don't need to put extra costs on them. We just have to change change the infrastructure, and we just have to provide positive images and scenarios to them. I hope and I truly believe that this will be enough to overcome these confrontations. The confrontations between the car industries and drivers on the one hand side, and more or less all others on the other hand side. And I think these confrontations are really slowing down these very beneficial developments that we actually all want to experience.
Mm. So that was number one. I remember that. That was the road diet. But you were talking about three other insights, main insight.
Exactly. It's mobility seeker, the second one. And mm-hmm. it is more or less what I already exemplified earlier, that especially the young generations are now very open, not only to drive their own cars. In contrast to it, they experience mobility, and they experience mobility as a game. So they really make use of these 30 options that I was addressing earlier. And they are, well, they use all these mobility and transportation issues on a daily basis, on a very situative basis. Yeah. Today I go with a public transit. Tomorrow I take my bike. The next day I maybe take my own cars. So they choose from these options, and they really show us what multi-mobility is all about. It's about it's a fascinating tool to be mobile in a city where I have all the options at my hand.
And as you said to me, it sounds really pretty young, a pretty young mega trend. I mean, young in terms of the target group, but also, is it a more urban lifestyle? Because in my picture, which arises, is that it is connected more to urban setting. Or do you think this floating, this gambling is also possible in a rural area?
No, I would agree to this. I think it's a very urban lifestyle. On the other hand side, we have the third trend. We have all-inclusive mobility. So yes, you can gamble with mobility in the urban sphere. But on the other hand side, there is the great wish to be more mobile, even if you live in the suburbs, even if you live in the periphery. People would like to have an application or a tool, a device, where they can use all different modes of transport, not only taking the public transit, not only taking a car sharing scheme, not only taking a bike scheme, but having one application in their hands, on their smartphone, which allows them to travel even from the suburbs in a very seamless way. And this is all-inclusive mobility. And there's especially commuters and especially business people really would like to rely on mobility out of one hand. Yeah. So one face to the customer, if you would term it like this.
So it's very much about the experience of traveling also, I guess.
Yeah, it's the experience, but obviously it's also the ability to do so. So you have to have the information, where is my next option? Yeah, when is my next option? And so it's about data, it's about information, and it's about the products, the vehicles. Yeah, so when I don't have these products, in the suburbs, so I have to create options for people living there that they can experience these kinds of mobility modes.
And if you don't, the other way around, if it's seamless, the change of the vehicle, for example, the change of the mobility system, then you don't bother. I mean, if it's really a fight, if it's really not connecting, if it's not fluent, if it's not seamless, you don't want to be a mobility seeker. But if it's seamless, Yeah, and that is a question of somehow the whole journey, the whole experience.
Exactly. When we speak about mobility as a service, yeah, or all-inclusive mobility, as I framed it, then, well, you have to have these products available for the people, for the commuters, for the business people. Otherwise, it's a barrier, and people are very reluctant to use mobility if it is a barrier. And I don't want to stand still in the winter somewhere in the suburbs without any option. So seamless mobility relies on products and it relies on information. And both is important. And thankfully, many startups and many mobility players are now investing in these kinds of fields of mobility. And so I'm very optimistic that we see a lot of change, especially in these issues.
And what contribution can come from the bikes for this mega trend?
Well, a great contribution, especially when you integrate the bikes in the infrastructure, not only in city centers, but also at the edges of the cities. So separated, very safe infrastructure for bikes is a prerequisite. On the other hand side, it's also a prerequisite to have adequate, to integrate bicycles, for example, in public transit. So even if it is sunny now in Berlin, it can easily rain in 2, 3, 4 hours. And to have the ability to integrate the bike into a bus or into a metro, I think is very, very important. Not to have separate tariff levels, not to have several obstacles to use it, but a very combined and integrated mobility system would be fantastic.
Yeah, so to say, an easy entry. And that was number two. What is about number three and four of your main insights? I'm a bit counting, always sticking back to.
Actually, I think I already talked about all-inclusive mobility. In terms of commuters and seamless mobility and all this. So I would now focus on the last one, on delivery bots. And delivery bots is a very technical trend, and it's a trend that really stems from the corona pandemic, when we are facing touchless mobility futures, when we are facing very hygienic mobility futures. This would be delivery bots, that you have small robots, small bots that are just autonomously, driverlessly floating through the city and carrying parcels, carrying letters, carrying food, maybe carrying some service issues as well, and bringing them from the retail or from the wholesale system directly to the consumer, to the end customer.
So that could be an extra episode for the podcast, the future of logistics, at least one.
Yes.
It's a very deep issue and topic.
Yes, and we are facing Black Friday, I guess, this Friday. And Black Friday normally meant huge amount of parcels, huge amount of boxes. And during the corona lockdown, we were facing even more parcels. So urban logistics is just at the beginning of changing the face of cities. There will be huge impacts, and we will need huge efforts to have a logistical system in place that circumvent the external effects, the negative external effects that we are facing today.
And what about cargo bikes in this issue? I mean, can cargo bikes support this logistic thing in a more technical meaning?
Definitely, definitely. I mean, it's not only parcels and boxes and letters and foods where cargo bikes would have a great impact. It's also the daily logistics of families. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when my kids were young, we had a cargo bike. And it is now, I would say it's seven, eight years ago that we were buying our first cargo bike. And just for bringing the kids to the kindergarten, yeah, mm-hmm. just for incorporating our daily groceries with a cargo bike, yeah, it was fantastic. And if I look around in Berlin, there are such enormous amounts of cargo bikes just in the streets, yeah. Electrified, non-electrified, for kids, for parcels, for boxes, for whatsoever.
It's
for everything. And again, I think it's only the beginning of a completely new phase of transportation in mm-hmm. cities. Yeah, 7-8 years ago, we were more or less alone with our cargo bike and everyone looked at us. Oh, what is this? Yeah. But when you go to the Netherlands or when you go to Scandinavia, you see so many cargo bikes that are already part of daily mobility routines. And this will happen in Germany as well. And this is just the beginning of a new time episode.
And it's getting a status symbol as well. I just read an article about cargo bikes and it was titled Cargo Bikes Are the New SUVs for Bikes. And I really smiled. I really laughed at this comparison. But there's a point of truth in it, because to my estimation or in my observation, bikes are getting more and more part of lifestyle and even in the terms of a status symbol. Yeah, I mean, it's getting more attractive to have a high price e-bike than it used to be. It's a tool to show off also.
Yes.
To be honest.
Yes. I have a folding bike. And actually, I don't need the folding option very often.
But you have a folding bike,
I have a folding bike. And it is unique. Yeah, it is a bike that is, well, you can see it now in the streets. When I bought it 1.5 years ago, it was a unique product. And obviously, yes, it was part of my lifestyle. It was part of the image that I wanted to tell the people. Yeah. Mm.
It's a statement.
And I think the article and what you were saying, it's totally right. Having a cargo bike as a status symbol. Yes, even though I don't have a family, or even though I'm not a courier, or I don't have to carry parcels in the city, but just to make a statement of, yes, this is my mobility. Mm. Here I am. And it's not a SUV and it's not a car, but I can do whatever I want to do with my cargo bike. Yes, I think that's truly right.
Mm. Which leads us more to the psychological aspects of riding bikes. Do you think there's such a thing like a psychological phenomena why bikes are so appealing these days? Well, we like a renaissance, yeah? What do you think? Is there anything special about riding a bike or belonging to the club of bicycle people?
I think in the modern times, we were saying that the car is freedom, is flexibility. Yeah, it was during the period of modernity. So in the 60s and 70s, when the car industry really boomed. And I think you can attribute exactly these statements to the bike today. It is today, it's freedom, it's flexibility, it's independence. Yeah.
Independence. Absolutely.
In every aspect. And yes, I would say due to this we are now experiencing a tipping point for this. I think we won't go back on pre-crisis levels, and crisis, I mean Corona. Yeah. Mm. So from now on, we are on a new level of biking, of cycling in Germany and all over Europe. And I think you are right. It's a renaissance. It's a tipping point. It's new mobility.
Hmm. What a perfect ending to our dialogue. Thank you so much, Stefan. There's just one question I would love to ask you. What are your personal future plans in terms of mobility? Are there any? Do you have any special mobility plans for you personally speaking?
Great question.
Another folding bike.
Yeah, my second folding bike.
A second.
But this is an interesting point, because I'm already reading newspaper articles. The people are saying, oh yeah, now the biking industry is really doing well this year because of the lockdown, because of Corona. But next year, no one is in the need to buy a new bike. Hmm. And this is completely wrong. Yes, exactly. It won't be a second folding bike, but obviously the whole scheme for bikes will get differentiated in future, will get much more diverse. And people will now start to buy a diversity of bikes from now on. Yeah, they will have a second bike, they will have a third bike. And I'm curious to see what my next bike will be all about next year. We think about to move our places from the city center more to the edges of Berlin. And so, yes, I need a diversity of bikes to overcome longer distances from next year or 2 years on. And this is, I think, these are criterias that are much more important for a variety of people, for a mass of people, not only having one bike that they bought this year, but incorporating these in their urban lifestyles on a much broader level. But to add one comment to this, then we need much more service. Even in the periphery, we need service for bikes in the suburbs. We need service for bikes at the edges of the cities. Today, if I go to a service station or whatsoever, they say, "Well, you have to wait for about 3 months so that we can work on your bike." 3 months. This is not
no
appropriate.
<option.
laughs> This is no option. Yeah, and I'm speaking of the city center. So I think we need joint efforts of the whole cycling sector, of the whole cycling industry, to overcome these deficits. Not only with regard of products and services, but in the whole understanding of what is a bike in the urban sphere.
Well, that's a real challenge and a great credo for our interview. Thank you so much, Stefan, for taking your time and sharing your thoughts on the bike industry and mobility, or future of mobility, with us here. It was so valuable for us, and thank you so much. And take care.
Thank you, Jule. It was a pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Riese und Müller Unplugged, the podcast for everything that gets us in motion. If you want to hear more, be sure to listen to our other episodes.